Good morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock and Whitney Bank Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during this call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to me, your moderator, David.Lundgren, L-U-N-D-G-R-E-N, at hancockbank.com. Today with us we have John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, and Investment Directors Greg Kodleski and Jeff Tangus. And John, we'll start with you, and as we normally do, we'll talk about the economy, and I know we sound like a broken record on all of these calls, but still more of the somewhat slow to moderate economic growth. During the month of January, we received the first print of real GDP for the fourth quarter, and that number came in at 0.7%, pretty much in line with, I think, what a lot of economists had expected, at least as we headed closer to that number. I think as we moved into the fourth quarter, people were anticipating that number to be closer to 2%. So somewhat disappointing from a growth standpoint. So if you could talk a little bit about the fourth quarter, and then maybe if you can give us some indication of where we are so far in the first quarter of 2016.
Okay, Dave. As you said, it sounds like we're running the same recording over and over and over, but we've been in a relatively slow, as I think everyone who's been listening to these calls know, a very slow recovery since the credit bust back in 2008, and nothing has really changed appreciably over the years. Looking at the most recent quarter, as you said, Dave, was up 0.7% annualized. That was down about 1.3% annualized from the third quarter. Pretty significant decline, and most of the key indicators that economists look at showed a decline from the prior quarter. And that would be consumer spending, exports, representing what would be happening in the area of world trade. And there was something else that showed. What was it? Commercial private fixed investments, which is basically, just think about it, is capital spending, was up a pretty negligible amount last month or in the last quarter, and contributed to that relatively soft report. There was a bright spot. Consumer spending, if I didn't mention consumer spending, was less than half of what it was for the prior quarter. There was a bright spot in that consumer disposable income numbers increased. Unfortunately, while that has been on a steady increase since the recession, it's been growing at about a 4.8%. Well, I beg your pardon. It's up about 5%, I guess, in aggregate since the second quarter of 2008. That's real consumer disposable income. The growth rate's been less than 1% over the past 2.5 years. So it's really not growing very, very fast. And overall, the economic picture appears to be one of very modest growth. And what one of our research sources likes to talk about is a C-minus economy. Other things that are happening that are having an impact on the economy currently come from asset classes and sectors of the economy that really were, until recently, I guess, recent years, in boom conditions based to a large extent on what happened relative to quantitative easing and the Fed's easy money policy and similar actions by other central banks around the world. We already know that commodities peaked in 2011. We've talked about that for a long time, have been declining ever since. Farmland entered a boom period a few years back, and that boom appears to be over, and probably prices peaked in farmland in the middle of the country about 18 months ago, and now appears to be in decline. The art market, there's another piece of the QE boom people don't really necessarily think about very often, but as a lot of money is created and a lot of profits are made in different ways, the art market always booms, and that sometimes comes along at the tail end of these periods. But the art market apparently peaked last year for expensive art. That's in decline. It looks like commercial real estate also was in a very strong move up for a period of years, and that appears to be peaking as we speak. So a lot of things are beginning to correct in terms of being too expensive relative to what the underlying economic fundamentals, really have been. And I guess that will probably continue for a while. The issue, of course, is, you know, does that take us into recession, or, you know, do we just stay in a low period of growth for a while until finally all of this stuff is ironed out? Well, the answer is, I guess we really don't know. However, the probability of recession is higher now than it was, than it has been, I guess, at any time since 2008. The calculations given various models range from a 25% probability maybe to about as high as 50. Well, you really need to get up to like a 70% probability on some of these items before you can point to a recession as being perhaps an imminent probability. You know, right now, the indications are that the economy will probably remain weak for a while, but since the leading indicators are still relatively positive, it suggests that the risk of recession is still fairly low. There's certainly a risk there that didn't exist a few years ago, but it appears to be still relatively low. So it looks like we're still in that 2% trend growth, plus or minus, that we've been in for a number of years. As we begin 2016, unfortunately, there isn't any indication that the economy is beginning to strengthen either here or really anywhere else in the world. And you're looking at coincident indicators that are roughly where they were, I guess, for most of last year. So if anything, you know, on the good side, I guess, it suggests that we're not rolling over into a recession at the present time, but it doesn't indicate that there's a lot of oomph out there in the economy that's likely to take us significantly higher in the next few quarters.
John, just to kind of put a number around it, you know, we're 1 month in, and now you said the coincident indicators look okay. You know, it's early, but are we looking at, I mean, I'm assuming we're still looking at a positive first quarter. You know, and maybe is it more like we experienced in the fourth quarter? Is it more like the third quarter when we actually did produce a 2% growth number? Is it, can you put a number around that? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of early to really make a guess. But looking at, for example, I'll give you one number. This is the Atlanta Federal Reserve puts out a coincident indicator called GDP Now, where they're trying to forecast the GDP number quarter by quarter as they get available data. Right now that number is about 1%, but again, it's fairly early. There's another coincident indicator I like to look at put out by the Philadelphia Federal Reserve that is still below zero, indicating a relatively weak environment, but it has actually improved a bit over the last couple of months. So putting those two together, I'm guessing that the first quarter now looks like one. I think the general consensus projection is probably more like two or two and a half, but the consensus is often a bit high. But in any case, positive, but it looks like it's still relatively weak.
Okay. And touch, you know, just what does the global picture look like? Specifically, maybe touch on China a bit as well.
Yeah, the global picture is weak, and I mean, we've talked about that a lot. It's been weak for quite some time. It doesn't appear to be getting a lot stronger. We just got some numbers yesterday from South Korean exports. South Korea is one of the first countries to report, apparently, in these periodic reports about what's happening to exports, and their exports were down about 20% year over year. That's a fairly weak number. Other countries are probably likely to report similar results. Again, this indicates that world trade is relatively soft. It probably indicates that China's imports and exports will not be particularly good. Their imports have been falling for quite some time as their exports have fallen, because they are still primarily a manufacturing and exporting country, and they're still weak, and their service sector is going to take some time to pick up, to take up the slack in, you know, that they're experiencing with the world trade situation. Europe, still growing very slowly, probably up and down one quarter to the next. It's hard to really see a discernible trend in place in Europe. The downside of the European situation now is that banks are beginning to show, you know, more weakness in Portugal and Italy. Non-performing loans in Italy are said to approach 17-18% of total bank deposits. That's a lot. So Italy has become a worry in the Eurozone. Portugal is a worry. And then there's still Greece. People haven't talked about Greece for a while, but they're in bad shape. And the risk of I guess, a sovereign default or some sovereign action, I guess, in Greece is still there. But the Eurozone is having a problem. Compounding their financial problem, of course, with their banks and so forth, is the migrant situation, which is putting a lot of strain on their resources. So the you know, the world picture is not great. You've got, I guess, overall growth, but it's relatively slow. In China, for example, they're estimating that Chinese growth is, say, 6% plus or minus, which is sounds pretty good to us, but when you've been growing at 10%, it's probably China's equivalent of a hard landing. You know, that is probably the equivalent of a Chinese recession, I guess, when you have growth at 6%. Given what the research figures show today. So, again, that's one reason our exports are down. We have a strong dollar relative to the rest of the world. That hurts our exports. Other currencies are declining in value relative to the dollar, giving them sometimes a competitive advantage, but that sort of thing doesn't really work very well for a very long period of time. So we've got a slow growth picture worldwide that's likely to continue for a while. And in the meantime, central banks in the international arena are trying to do what they can to improve growth prospects, but they might be making it worse before they make it better. Japan has gone into their, 10th, 11th, 12th version of quantitative easing, I suppose. Household income in Japan hasn't improved at all, but in their zeal to try to improve the picture inside Japan, the Japanese Central Bank is reported to be even buying corporate bonds at negative yields. Probably somewhat desperate, I guess, to do something to try to improve the situation inside Japan and aren't having a great deal of luck. So I think a lot of the slow growth issues that we're facing here and around the world are probably the result of well-meaning but perhaps ineffective and distortion-producing operations by the central banks that have, you know, created somewhat artificial environments, I guess, that have, created little mini bubbles in different asset classes around the world. And now all that has probably run its course, and we're probably going to have a continued adjustment until this works out. But unfortunately, the world that we live in is a weird one. And as long as the central banks are meddling and as long as they're doing what they can, I guess, to stabilize things, making mistakes along the way, we're going to be in a very uncertain environment and probably a relatively slow growth environment. So it looks like we're on the same path we've been on for a number of years, and hopefully at some point that will end and things will return to normal, but it may be a while.
Before we talk about stocks, last night we had the Iowa caucuses, and, it's just the first step of many, but it's a big step. You know, there's a lot of buildup to get to this point. Thought the results were pretty interesting and not necessarily expected in both the Democratic and Republican race. Any thoughts on where we are regarding the presidential election, and I'm assuming it's too early for anything to be, market or economy any kind of impact on either one of those at this point, but maybe not. Tell me your thoughts on that.
The results suggest that the Republican establishment candidates are out and the anti-establishment candidates are in, and that would be Trump, Cruz, and Rubio. Someone this morning was suggesting that Rubio was now the standard bearer for the Republican establishment, which sounds a bit odd, but nevertheless, considering the way the voting turned out and his particular campaign issues, that appears to be the case. So it's Trump, Cruz, and Rubio going forward, it appears. On the Democratic side, Hillary barely won Iowa, and Bernie was breathing down her neck, I guess, as the voting ended. I happened to see something from Gallup this morning that indicates the net favorable ratings of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders among people that lean Democratic as far as their votes are concerned. And Sanders' net favorables now exceed Hillary Clinton's by 53-49. And that's a big change from where it was about 6 months ago. There was also a recent report trying to understand or describe where Bernie's support was coming from. And it appears to be to a large degree from millennials below the age of 30 who seem to be enamored of socialism, apparently without even understanding what it is. When you get among older voters, then you get a very different picture as far as the Democratic-leaning voters are concerned. So it looks like this is going to be a very interesting campaign, but according to the people who follow these things very closely, you have to get past New Hampshire and into South Carolina and some of the others before you really get a picture about who's ahead and how this thing is going to develop. But this is going to be one of, as we all know, one of the more interesting presidential campaigns in history.
It will be, and I'm sure we'll be discussing it in months to come. Greg, let's talk about the stock market. Wasn't exactly a great month for stocks. I think I read somewhere it was the worst start, the worst first 10 trading days for the market ever. We were down on the S&P 500 almost 10% at one point during the month, I think somewhere around the 20th. We had a bit of a rebound at the end of the month, so that the S&P 500 finished down 5%, which, you know, doesn't sound overly exciting, but compared to where we were, it's kind of nice to see a rally as we headed into February. Small cap stocks really didn't see the bounce. They struggled a lot more than the large cap stocks did. The Russell 2000 was down almost 9% for the month. And then from an international perspective, right in the middle. And if we look at the ACWI, which is the All-Country World Index, ex the United States, it was down almost 7% for the month. So pretty tricky. A lot of volatility, not exactly the start that we wanted. Give us a little color regarding the month and then maybe talk a little bit about where we think things are heading.
Yeah, the large cap stocks were down 9.03%, and then, as you said, the 20th, they kind of rallied a bit. They were up 4.35% to finish off the year, or finish off the month of January, I should say. And small caps, yeah, did a little bit worse. They also bottomed, actually, on the 19th. They were down 10.44%, and then they rallied back a little bit, up 4.71% from that January 19th low. In terms of sector performance, the worst performing sector in the S&P or large caps was the materials area. That was down 10.57% for the month. I think everyone probably would have thought it would have been energy, but energy's had a hard run. The next worst performing were financials, which were 8.85. Healthcare down 7.59. Industrials were down 5.74. Consumer discretionary stocks were down 5.11, and energy that was down 3.02 for the month. And again, these are the large caps. The only positive sectors for the month were consumer staples, which were up just 0.65%, telecoms up 6.77%, and utilities up 4.93%, traditionally very defensive sectors. So clearly, if any money was shifting around, it was rotating into more defensive type areas. Mid-caps were not immune from it also. They were down big, except in this case, energy took a big hit. They were down 10.41. Telecoms, interestingly, were down 10.43. Really, the only sector that was positive were utilities at 3.73. Consumer discretionary stocks were down 5.11. Staples were down 4.32. Financials down 5.59. Healthcare down 6.47. Industrials 5.61. And materials down 5.88. Technology was down almost 10% at 8.12. So a lot of carnage going on there also. And then finally, in the small cap area, pretty much mirrored what was going on in the mid cap area. Worst performing area, again, was energy, down 10.89, and healthcare, which is, was a little bit odd again, minus 10.92. And materials really was the worst of all of the sectors. They were down 11.05. The remainder of the other sectors were down in single digits, discretionary minus 4.23, staples minus 1.34, financials minus 6.93, industrials 6.34, technology down 4.48, so about half of what the mid-caps did. And then telecom down 3.21. The outlook, I guess, right now, it's still pretty murky. Clearly, things are weak, and you know the weak GDP report for the fourth quarter. We would need to see things improve, I think, and I think probably the current themes that have followed us into 2016, that being things that John pointed out, China. I think, the Federal Reserve, I think the Fed raised rates again in March. I think it might be premature, but I think from what I'm reading, I think the Fed is pretty cognizant that the global economy is slowing, and I think they're going to think long and hard about whether or not they really want to shock the markets, because I think that's generally what's going to happen if they do another tightening so soon after the first tightening. I would think that they would want to see something that happens a little further out. But if the Fed does tighten, that's going to have an impact on the dollar. Again, as John pointed out, the stronger dollar hurts our exports because we're less competitive. That'll probably continue to drive down oil and commodity prices. High-yield bonds, which tend to correlate highly with the stock market, will probably decline along with stocks. Which would then also imply probably the savings rate would go up, which means that consumption would go down, and that would potentially push us closer to a recession in the U.S. So, again, I think I would hope that the Fed takes a long, hard look at that. I was also reading another thing. This is one of these Internet betting sites. In terms of looking at the election, I just thought I'd throw this in. But election betting odds of a Republican presidential nominee, this is as of January 28th, Trump comes in at 45.7%. Rubio is next at 28%. Cruz at 10.9%. Bush at 9.6%. Chris Christie at 1.5%. And Dennis Kasich at 1.1%. So certainly is going to be an interesting election. Finally, just looking at some of the more recent economic releases during the month of the end of January, and basically it came in 2-1 with most economic highlights coming in on the lower side rather than on the higher. So I think we do need to see things firm up and get a clearer picture before this market's ready to take off. At least it seems right now that it has found some kind of a bottom or at least a resting place. I wouldn't necessarily say that we couldn't have any more sell-off. I think volatility certainly is going to be the name of the game during 2016. So cross your fingers that things do improve soon.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Jeff, you heard Greg kind of touched on the Fed, and I think, you know, towards the end of 2015, it seemed all indications is that the Fed was going to tighten four times. That was kind of the word for 2016. I don't know that there's many people still in the camp that believe that's going to happen. You know, a lot of it with, you know, I guess there's a couple things, and you can agree or tell me where I'm missing things, but with, I guess, central banks across the globe easing, you know, if the Fed were to continue to tighten, you know, it only strengthens the dollar more. And with all the volatility that we've seen in the stock market and some weaker economic news, it just doesn't seem probable that we're going to see, you know, the Fed raise rates four times. I'm not sure if, you know, two or three are even in the cards. What do you think?
Well, I think the Fed, once again, has managed to get itself into quite a conundrum here. You touched on it. They talked a big game all during 2015 about raising rates and being data-dependent and all this sort of thing. And you know, going into this year, probably the vast majority of market participants, certainly we're not part of that group, but most of them were thinking four Fed rate increases this year. If you look at some of the indicators in the market, that four is now down to about two and maybe even on its way to one. Now, some of that's heavily influenced by the short-term events lately in the stock market and in the emerging markets, things that are going on around the world outside of our borders that's affecting the markets and the market psychology. But it's clear that the Fed is, in my mind anyway, the Fed's not going to raise four times this year. They can't do it. I mean, if they were to do it, the dollar gets stronger. You know, the dollar has appreciated over 20% since the middle of 2014. If you're Caterpillar Tractor or John Deere and you're selling something on the international market right now and you're up against, let's say, Komatsu or Kubota, some of the Japanese manufacturers, you know, you've had a price increase of 20% on the world market compared to your Japanese competitors. Well, obviously, you're uncompetitive at that point. More Fed interest rate increases makes the dollar even stronger, makes Caterpillar Tractor less competitive. I mean, it's becoming not just a hindrance, but it's becoming debilitating to some of these exporters. And the vast majority of the big American corporations export a great deal of their product around the world, whether it's Coca-Cola or Caterpillar Tractor. International trade is a big part of it. So a stronger dollar is not helping corporate profits in corporate America. So that's got to weigh pretty heavily on the Fed. Originally it was anticipated the Fed meets in mid-March. They were going to raise in mid-March. You know, it's almost impossible to figure out what the Fed is going to do because everything they're doing has nothing to do with the reality on the ground. It has to do with the Fed and their mindset that the action that they've taken has created certain bubbles, some issues, and John Portwood's talked about those issues, those bubbles, a lot in recent meetings. But they're trying to get out of this box that they painted themselves in. But unfortunately, economic events just don't allow them to do that without a lot of issues, a lot of other side issues. Probably the number one thing recently that's gotten in the Fed's way is this movement, the surprise movement by Japan to go to negative interest rates on some bank deposits, or bank reserves, I should say. And, of course, that exacerbates the dollar strength issue. And it also points out how the Fed is just going it alone. They're out there doing their own thing while the rest of the world is going in the opposite direction. So my guess is that's going to have a big influence. My guess is they don't raise in March. The next likely opportunity to raise after that is June. They typically raise only in meetings where they have press conferences scheduled. So the next one of those, even though they meet more often than that, the next scheduled press conference, I think, is in June. So that might be the next time we actually see the Fed or at least seriously consider some kind of action. But they've got themselves into a very, very difficult situation, and unfortunately, unless things changed around the world economically to the better, pretty drastically, there's no easy way for the Fed to get out of this situation they're in now.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. And in closing, let's just maybe a few comments on the bond market. You know, I guess with a lot of the volatility that we saw in stocks, it really drove Treasury yields down. We started 2016 with the 10-year right around 2.3%. We closed January at 192. So pretty significant move over the course of the month. Was that just money looking for a safe place to land? Is it related to the Fed, all of the above, and then some?
Well, it's certainly related to the instability in the stock market. There's a flight to quality going on there. Oil continued to decline. That also is affecting future inflation expectations. And it also, the stability and decline in oil has certainly, we think, influences the Fed's action, too, all of which combined to say that really inflation is nowhere to be seen on the horizon, and that's probably the biggest factor in pricing and interest rates. So so rates are down. You know, inflation expectations have collapsed so much that it's hard to really even get your arms around it. One of the things that I thought was most interesting about oil, which is of course a big part of inflation, is the fact that right now in the futures market, you can buy oil for delivery in December of 1999, so however many years from now that is, for $48 a barrel. That to me is just mind-boggling. So the market is telling you is that low oil prices isn't here for just this year and next year. It's here for years to come. So unless we see a dramatic change in the supply-demand equation, which we certainly don't see outside of some sort of a war or conflict in the Middle East, low oil prices and low inflation are around for a long time.
Jeff, you mentioned the futures price. What was the contract year?
December of 1999.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we will call it a wrap there. Thank you, everybody, for joining this morning. Our next meeting next month will be Tuesday, March 1st. Talk to you then. Thanks.